morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 7, 2016. High-level officials from South Sudan and Sudan meet in Khartoum to repair their strained relations.
There's hope that a relation between Sudan and South Sudan will improve. Example, you have many of the South Sudanese who have gone to Sudan, very many of them, over 400,000. We have also many of the Sudanese people who are in South Sudan in the business sector, and we need to benefit from Sudan in the same way they want to also to benefit from us.
And analysts say the United Nations African Union hybrid mission in Darfur has failed.
It is badly planning its own peacekeeping process. And again, so now it is not only mistrusting communities, mistrusting the government, and mistrusting the community. Why are they here?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan and South Sudan have taken steps to strengthen their bilateral ties more than a month after Khartoum once again accused Juba of supporting rebels who are fighting to topple President Omar al-Bashir's regime. Sudan threatened to close the border with South Sudan in mid-March. Three South Sudanese ministers returned from Khartoum yesterday after signing several security agreements. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Defense Minister Kwal Manyang Juk, Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Alor, and Interior Minister Alfred Ladugore traveled to Khartoum last Friday to meet with their counterparts and President Omar Hassan al-Bashir in a bid to iron out their differences. Alor told journalists in Juba upon arriving back from Khartoum last night that the two sides signed an agreement on security matters aimed at minimizing insecurity along the borders between the two countries.
The center line, demilitarized zone, and the crossing corridors. We have signed an agreement on those three issues. We are discussing bilateral issues. We are discussing the problems between the two countries. We are also discussing how to overcome those problems. We have agreed to open a new page because we need to resolve all our problems with the Sudan.
Alor says the agreement also addresses economic challenges facing both countries as a result of lack of cooperation as well as the drop in the demand for oil. Juk calls the trip by the Transitional Government of National Unity to Khartoum as the start of a new page in relations between South Sudan and Sudan.
We discuss on how we implement the peace in the area, how do we work for the peace in the area. And we came out with a very fruitful meeting, and it's a turning point. And had things been like this, there would not have been any problem between the South and the Sudan.
In recent years, Juba and Khartoum have repeatedly accused each other of supporting rebels fighting against their two respective governments. Juk says the visit was aimed at repairing those damaged relations.
There's hope that a relation between Sudan and South Sudan will improve. Example, you have many of the South Sudanese who have gone to Sudan, very many of them, over 400,000. We have also many of the Sudanese people who are in Sudan here, in South Sudan, in the business sector. And we need to benefit from Sudan in the same way they want also to benefit from us. And we need their technical experience. We need our students to go and learn and study in Sudan. So we have a lot in common between us.
Juk says under the recently signed agreement, Juba and Khartoum will withdraw their armies from disputed border areas. The two countries are yet to demarcate the common border after South Sudan separated from Sudan in 2011. Khartoum sat down its border with the South Sudan in January, blocking bilateral trade between the two countries. Juk says both governments must continue to work together to address many problems, including the economic crisis in the two countries. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Hundreds of items are on display today in an exhibition at WOW Youth Center. The items were made by a group of women who learned how to make the items in a recent 5-week skills training program. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from WOW.
Organizers say the women who graduated from the skills program should be able to train other women, especially widows and school dropouts, so that they too can earn a living or pay for their tuition fees using income from handmade products. The products include everything from wallets and handbags to tablecloths made out of beads and other local materials. Mariana John David bought a handbag for 1,500 South Sudanese pounds. Speaking in Arabic, she says the price is affordable.
When I came, the products impressed me. They are beautiful, but only that I arrived when they are already closing. I did not know these are available here. I would have come earlier. The products are even better than imported ones. I advise that they make announcements so that many come to buy from them. They can really help a lot at home.
Another customer, Sifonia Tartiso, is also impressed with the level of detail in the handcrafted items. Speaking in Arabic, she says she cannot afford the price but hopes to learn the skills so she can make a handbag for herself.
I'm happy with what our women are doing. I want them to spread these skills to those in the residential areas because many of them want such lucrative business skills but could not get it.
Susan Ropi has been teaching the women for 1 month. She says the women have produced products worth 50,000 South Sudanese pounds, or about $1,100. She says her office will continue to support the group with funds until the women have enough money to start their own business.
The handbags we sell in 1,500. In the number, they are all 35. That one, the small bag. Then the price is 250. Then we have 4 sets of tablecloths. Another one, 2,000. Another one is also 2,000. The third one is 1,500. The fourth one is 700. Because we calculate the money where we have spent in buying the materials. Then we add the labor and the profit.
Ropi says many widows and orphans in South Sudan could benefit from learning such skills because they are not generating any income on their own. She says unlike other businesses that women usually pursue, like brewing local beer, selling handcrafts will provide more income, which will eventually enable the women to buy their own plots of land. Susan Pasquale is executive director of the Juba-based Women Advancement Organization, which helped organize the training program. She thanked UNICEF for funding the project and says her group will continue to help women help themselves.
For Women Advancement was just founded to support the women, to empower the women. We empower the women in a number of things, including peace building, including gender-based violence, education, adult numeracy and literacy.
Pasquale says girls who have dropped out of school due to financial constraints will be able to return to the classroom if they learn handcraft skills and start a business. Sahara Fodul is a recent graduate from the program. Speaking in Arabic, she says she will now be able to raise money to pay her university tuition fee. This business will depend on the price of the materials in the market, she says. Like the spool of thread is sold at 20 South Sudanese pounds, and you need a duster which contains 12 in order to make a table cover, she adds. But actually, she says, it helps a lot because you will be able to get money. Fodul says she no longer will be sitting idle because she will be busy making handcrafts and will earn money from selling her products. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
Health officials in Budue State's Tambura County say more than 6 HIV/AIDS patients have died from opportunistic infections after a treatment center in the area closed due to a strike by nurses. The health workers say they have not been paid in 5 months. As Gift Friday reports for VOA from Juba, county health workers have now returned to work after the United Nations Development Program paid their salaries.
The 15 health workers walked off the job on May 18th to protest the non-payment of 5 months of their wages. It's the second time in 2 years employees at the HIV treatment center in Tambura have gone on strike. Since the HIV treatment center was established more than 5 years ago, the NGO International Medical Corps paid the salaries of its staff up through 2014. The United Nations Development Programs took over payment of staff salaries in 2015 using the Global Fund money. HIV focal person in Tombra County, Kalisto Nzeme, says the World Health Organization only supplies the center with drugs. Cecilia Basungoro is living with HIV/AIDS. She says her husband and their last born child are all HIV positive. She says she has been living with the virus for 10 years. Speaking in Arabic, Basungoro says she did not receive her drugs for the past 3 weeks.
Our office has been closed for 3 weeks now. I haven't received my drugs and we are suffering, hence many of our members have died.
Health workers returned to work yesterday after the United Nations Development Program paid the health workers 3 of their 5 month salaries in arrears. Basungoro says she is relieved the HIV treatment center has reopened. Regina Waure, another HIV patient from Tombra, says she has been living with the HIV virus for the last 12 years. She says many patients have been admitted in the hospital with opportunistic diseases after missing their drugs over the last 3 weeks. Speaking in Arabic, Waure says many of the patients have fallen sick after not taking the ARVs.
Even our children who are on medication are suffering due to lack of drugs. We are suffering a lot. Many sicknesses like malaria, typhoid have entered our bodies.
John Biwa is the chairperson of the Association of People Living with HIV and AIDS in Tombra County. Speaking in the local Zande language, Biwa says some of the patients are going through difficulties.
Trauma has entered my people. That is not a lie. This is because they were told not to miss a day without taking the ARVs. But now they have spent 3 weeks without taking their drugs. Their health conditions are not good. They fear that they will have to start taking the drugs afresh.
HIV health worker in Tombra County, Kalisto Nzeme, says they have spent 1 year without signing a new contract with either an organization or the state government. Nzeme says staff at the HIV treatment center had no choice but to go on a strike given the current high cost of living.
We have resumed the work. The UNDP sent 3 months' salary to the staff. So we thought that this is our community. We cannot remain on strike. They have to come back and help the community, waiting for the rest of the month. We said we cannot continue on the strike. These people are dying. This is our community. We cannot benefit from that.
Nzeme is appealing to the Budwe state government to take the request of the health workers into consideration. Samuel Timoteo is the Budwe state director of HIV and AIDS in the Ministry of Health. He admits health workers were not on contract for the last year.
They have the right to complain about who takes care of them. People need guarantee. People are given contracts to at least be sure of what they are going to do. This is true. We need to learn what to do.
He says his ministry plans to visit Tombra County and meet with the health workers and address their issues once and for all. More than 4,000 people in Tombra County are living with HIV. Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a closer look at the challenges facing the UN African Union hybrid mission in Darfur. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are you looking forward to the most in the future?
I want to basically get money and a job, stable job, in the future. That's what I'm looking forward for. And basically money and a house, and just I want to be better off than I am right now.
I should maybe have a good job where I can be able to feed myself, my relative, and so forth.
To be at peace in future, say that everybody can mind on his own business. They can just settle their families and also look about their personal hygiene and health.
my dream, which is to work with UN. Yeah, it's been always my dream, and I know I will one day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Today is Tuesday, and in our health segment, we take a look at psychiatric problems in South Sudan. Alcohol abuse and regulated use of marijuana could trigger mental disorders. That is according to South Sudanese psychiatrist Ayuel Atong. Dr. Atong says she's been treating patients who have shown symptoms related to excessive consumption of alcoholic drinks and other stimulants. In our third installment of our four-part series on psychiatric care in South Sudan, Dr. Atong talks about the types of mental disorders in the country. Ayen Bure reports from Washington.
Dr. Ayuel says drug and alcohol abuse is one of the main causes of mental stress for her patients at Juba Teaching Hospital. The World Health Organization says psychoactive substance abuse worldwide is extensive, about 2 billion alcohol users and 185 million drug users. Dr. Ayuel says it is hard to get exact numbers for the prevalence of drug and alcohol abuse in South Sudan, but she treats struggling substance abuse patients on a daily basis. She says alcohol and marijuana abuse are two of the substances that most often lead to symptoms of mental disorders.
The main presentation that the patient presents with is the substance-related disorders, alcohol, cannabis, and other things. So we do have a high rate of substance-related disorders. We do have a high rate of schizophrenia and schizoaffective disorders, which is psychosis. We do have bipolar affective disorders. And we have also an increased number of the so-called general medical condition-induced mental illnesses. And by saying that, I mean mental illnesses secondary to malaria, mental illness secondary to typhoid, mental illness secondary to epilepsy. So those diseases are very numerous in South Sudan, and we do have the presentation, the complication of mental illness as their presentations.
Dr. Ayuel says the range of patients that she treats on a weekly basis is diverse, but she says drugs and alcohol are the leading causes of temporary or even permanent mental disorders in the South Sudanese capital.
I see those of drug, I see those of forensic, those who had been violated the rules by way or another because they are sick. Our typical days, we do see patients, the age range from 15, 16, up to 65, 80, or 60-something.
The United States Department of Health and Human Services says mental illness and substance use disorder share some underlying causes, including changes in brain composition, genetic vulnerabilities, and early exposure to stress or trauma. Substance abuse problems also occur more frequently with certain mental health problems like depression, anxiety disorders, or schizophrenia. Dr. Ayuel says it is difficult for her office to know how many people in South Sudan are affected by drug and alcohol abuse because the government does not keep track of such figures. But she says their widespread prevalence have made it difficult for Dr. Ayuel and her staff to treat patients.
Those substances, we do call them psychoactive. In a way or another, they do change the chemical balance of the brain. A lot of theorists had been working on this, that they predispose person to mental illnesses. But by themselves alone, they are not the cause. So they accelerated the presentation of the symptom. The one who's taking cannabis and the one who's not taking cannabis, this one can have the symptom earlier than the other one. So because they affect the balance of the chemical in the brain, as I told earlier.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says a few symptoms that come with substance abuse disorder include changes in appetite or sleep patterns, unexplained changes in personality or attitude, sudden mood swings, irritability or angry outburst, periods of unusual hyperactivity, agitation or giddiness, lacking motivation, appearing fearful, anxious or paranoid, with no apparent reason. Dr. Ayuel says early substance abuse can lead to a lifelong addiction.
This is an addiction disorder, so we need to treat the cases because the person cannot stop taking alcohol or cannot stop taking cannabis. He's going on doing things and his life is a mess and he need to be helped. Or actually they had already imbalanced the brain chemicals, then the patient presented with a mental illness.
Next week we'll explore the human rights of mentally ill patients. Dr. Ayuel says she has seen instances where mentally ill people are kept behind bars or chained up by their own families. Ayuel says although the issue is controversial and a violation of the human rights of mentally ill patients, she says the lack of resources in South Sudan to help sick loved ones has given families little to no options. For VOA News, I'm Ayen Bior. in Washington.
The United Nations African Union hybrid mission in Darfur has been operating in a volatile environment in Western Sudan for 11 years. Some Sudanese analysts say the mission has failed to protect civilians in Darfur. In our second installment of a five-part series on UNAMID, we take a closer look at the work of the peacekeeping mission and some of the challenges it faces while carrying out its mandate. Nabil Biagio has this report for VOA from Juba.
UNAMID spokesman Ashraf Issa says working in a region where government planes indiscriminately bomb villages to stamp out rebels and government-allied militia groups attack civilians and loot property has proven to be difficult. Issa says the proliferation of weapons in Darfur also poses a huge challenge to peacekeepers. He says UNAMID usually steps up patrols around hot spots where flare-ups occur. He says UNAMID forces also patrol population activities, such as when civilians and IDPs go out to collect firewood or water.
In addition to our administrative patrols and escorting humanitarian aid, we do these patrols to build confidence amongst the communities so that they see that we are there and we are discharging our mandate. And at the same time, it acts as a deterrent for elements who might wish to engage those vulnerable populations.
Since UNAMID was established in late 2007, dozens of its personnel, both military and police, have been killed in the line of duty while escorting humanitarian workers or carrying out the regular patrols. Issa says vastness of the region makes peacekeeping a difficult job.
Darfur is the size of France, the largest European country. So what we try to do is we try to match our resources with the peacekeeping requirements on the ground, which means that the force commander and the force chief of staff for UNAMID have to develop approaches to maximize the value of peacekeeping and match it with the current needs on the ground.
Haj Hamad is a Khartoum-based researcher at the Social and Human Development Consultative Group. He says many people expected UNAMID to build confidence among the various Darfuri communities. Hamad says the people of Darfur have little interaction with the peacekeepers.
And this would have been a chance for such kind of a mission to give an example of the difference between an international mission, like UNMISS, for instance, and a hybrid mission where we are Africans. The failure of the mission, in fact, comes on this very specific side, that they failed to win the communities to their side.
Hamad says UNAMID has not done enough to protect civilians in hot spots like Jebel Marra, where the government has been recently battling the rebels of the Sudan Liberation Movement, Abdul Wahid Nur faction.
Take the international mission in Kosovo or in Serbia or in old Yugoslavia, that the peacekeepers will go and make a buffer zone between rebel held lands and government held lands. So at least we will not expect a flare-up of active war as long as there is kind of such a huge mission around. So in fact, even it is badly planning its own peacekeeping process. And again, so now it is not only mistrusting communities, mistrusting the government, and mistrusting the community. Why are they here?
Khartoum University lecturer and political commentator Ismail Ibrahim agrees. He says a force like UNAMID should be able to use its military resources based on the Chapter 7 mandate to make sure that civilians are not attacked by either the rebels or the government.
It is just a symbolic existence because one of the fundamental goals or purposes of UNAMID is to protect the civilians.
Tomorrow, we look at the question of what is UNAMID's exit strategy and how will Darfur look once UNAMID pulls out. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Veterans of the 22-year-old long civil war with Sudan meet once a week to play wheelchair basketball in Juba. Disabled people in South Sudan face discrimination, high rates of substance abuse and unemployment. But these men show what else is possible. Jason Patinkin has the story for VOA from Juba.
The men meet at Juba Basketball Stadium every Tuesday. Some are war veterans with missing legs. Others were stricken by polio. But all of them are athletes. These are players in South Sudan's Wheelchair Basketball Association. They don white, blue, and yellow jerseys and roll up and down the court, dribbling, making passes, and shooting layups. They slam into each other going for loose balls, contest for rebounds under the hoop, and race down the court on fast breaks. Gatluak Kwa Luak helped found the team in 2011. He lost his leg while a soldier in the Second Sudanese Civil War in 2000 and learned the sport as a refugee in Kenya. Today, Luak is one of the most dominant players, dribbling around opponents at will. But it wasn't always so simple.
Wheelchair basketball. It is not easy game. It's very technical. It needs a lot of courage. It needs a lot of mind. Let me say it. You have to be committed.
The game has become an important part of recovering from his war wounds.
I thought it wouldn't go work. But when I try, I got more interesting, and then it worked. Then I realized after it has worked, it has changed bigger part of disability in me to ability. I realized that I can do anything like other people. Disability is not inability.
Many disabled South Sudanese sink into alcoholism and poverty. James Amule, who was stricken with polio when he was 2 years old, says disabled people are passed over for jobs in South Sudan and called Abukareng a slur.
The nickname Abukareng, which means a disabled person. They call you disabled person, which is not supposed to be. I have a name. I need to be called by my name, not by a nickname. As my name is called James Amule, even if you call me that a disabled person, I will not feel like I am a human being.
Already, the sport is changing attitudes. Achwil Malik, Secretary General of the South Sudan Basketball Federation, hopes the wheelchair basketball players will represent South Sudan at this year's Paralympics in Brazil. Competing at that level internationally is something the country's able-bodied team has yet to do.
Of course, giving them a chance to go to Rio de Janeiro will be a big boost to people of South Sudan. They are available. We are all hopeful that South Sudan flag can be raised during the Paralympics.
For now, though, Luak says he wants to grow the sport at home. For the last 2 years, South Sudan has fought another civil war and produced more wounded veterans.
We are approaching everyone out to have that courage and play wheelchair basketball so that they also begin a new life and realize that they can still do something because they are not longer a part of what they are before. Like me, I have been like that. It's not a curse.
For a nation in need of healing, Luak and his teammates could be examples of how to move forward. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday. I am John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. We will leave you with Kang JJ and his song, Coin Kill.